This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to this CIO market update from LGIM. I'm Max Julius, Head of Content, and I'm delighted to be joined by Sonia Loud, CIO, Madeline King, Head of Research and Engagement, and John Rowe, Head of Multi-Asset Funds. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the pod.
Good morning, Max.
Morning.
Morning.
Morning. Well, much has happened to shape the investment landscape in recent weeks, with inflation, the conflict in Ukraine, and central bank deliberations continuing to dominate investor attention. So with no further ado, Sonia, of the many noteworthy market and macro developments since our call last month, which are at the forefront of your thinking and why do they matter to investors?
Yes, thank you, Max. And I think you've mentioned quite a number of them already. And so to kick off, it is literally all of the above. What has been noteworthy, though, is the way how markets have adjusted in a very short period of time to acknowledge the level of acceleration we have seen, in particular around inflation, which clearly has been magnified by the energy crisis, which has been triggered by the geopolitical conflict in Ukraine. And as we've outlined a number of times across these podcasts, we always said that obviously central bank policy would be the deciding factor for markets this year. And I think to put it in context and obviously highlighting the market adjustment process, the first quarter 22 has been the worst for global bond markets in a 30-year period. And it just tells you not only obviously the journey that is behind us and that, as we all know, has been incredibly beneficial for investors, but the potential inflection point and obviously the journey from here that will be markedly different to that 30-year period. And as we know, central banks will hold the key. And as we've discussed a number of times, it's been the shortness of time with which markets had to digest the shift in central bank policy. And that clearly has accelerated further because we are seeing inflation prints at 40-year highs. And as such, obviously, the market had to adjust to a much faster pace of rate hikes and monetary tightening. And again, this is a major shift to the environment that we had in the past. So I think with that in mind, and obviously knowing how bad the environment has been for global bond markets, for investors, that's not all, because clearly for global equity markets, that has not been plain sailing either. Because of the energy crisis, because of the geopolitical conflict, obviously growth expectations had to be adjusted downwards as well. With regional differences, it's very clear that Europe will be affected a lot more than, for example, the US or Asia. But nevertheless, you are seeing now a fourth dimension into the overall mix, how we look at the global environment and the geopolitical uncertainty not only has near-term implications, as I've just said, and this is something that you will see reflected in expectations for 22, 23. But if we do think about the longer term implications, then clearly thoughts around globalization or deglobalization will probably play a much larger role going forward, with not unimportant consequences on how we think about the global market landscape.
Thank you for that overview, Sonia. And John, on the topic of growth expectations, what are markets telling us about the likelihood of a global recession or stagflation?
It's a really interesting mix, because when you look at, normally we'd look at market measures as being the best way of seeing what's really going on in markets. When you look at that, actually volatility markets are remarkably well behaved. So we're a long way below the peak in the VIX, for example, that we were at a couple of weeks ago. But then when you look at surveys, people say they're really negative. So you've got around half of investors expecting a recession by the end of 2023. What's really notable and really important to emphasize is historically investors and economists have been horrendously poor at predicting recessions. So actually for us, the fact that 50% of people are expecting one by the end of 2023 is almost a suggestion that that mentality has maybe gone too far, simply because the base rate suggests that it's very hard to predict recessions. And if you've got more than half the people predicting one that far out, that's a concern. I think the stagflation one's clearer. And I think you see that both in inflation break-even. So if you look at kind of five-year forward, so longer term inflation expectations, Then on some measures, those are the highest since about 2013, so nearly a decade now. And I think on that side, it's as Sonia said, it's particularly Europe because you've got that bigger pass-through on the energy side. But even in the US, there is a concern that the Fed will have to do all these rate hikes, and in doing so, we'll end up with a low growth rate and quite high inflation.
Thanks, John. Very interesting about the difficulty of predicting recessions. I think there's one famous economist who predicted 10 of the last three recessions, something to that effect. How is the asset allocation team positioning in light of the backdrop you've just described?
So we think the most important thing is on the inflationary side to not pretend that you can predict the inflationary process. So the correlation between realized inflation and inflation forecast for the Bank of England over the last 10 or 15 years is actually negative, which gives you some idea, all that money spent and they'd have been better off putting in zero every month. So it's a remarkable situation. Once you accept that, then you have to accept there's a great degree of uncertainty. And then what you're really looking for is to limit the degree to which you take a fundamental view. And instead of that, to actually look for when most investors are on one side of the boat or the other side of the boat, and then to lean against them. So sentiment and positioning become crucially important when you don't really believe the fundamental narrative. So we've seen a lot of talk about, is inflation structural or transitory? And we still see that in the surveys for investors. It doesn't matter. What does matter is that central banks believe that if they get inflation, they have to act regardless of the impact on real incomes, regardless of the impact on people's ability to pay their bills. And so seeing the inflation, we know there will be a central bank reaction. And then it's all about just looking at where the sentiment goes too far one way or the other.
Well, thanks for that, John. It's a great point to bring Madeline into the conversation. Madeline, what do tighter monetary policy, rising inflation and recession risk mean for credit markets over the coming months?
Well, unsurprisingly, it's not good news. These are all bad things for most investors, but particularly bond investors. So it is a tough time to be a credit investor, I would say. That being said, there is some kind of good news hidden under there, which is, you know, this isn't the first difficult period for companies and for investors in recent years. And what we found is that the companies that we invest in, essentially, if they've survived the last few years, they've got a pretty solid business model and they're in decent shape. So what I don't worry about is credit quality in the same way that I would have in this same environment a few years ago. Companies are generally being really conservative. Balance sheets are in very, very good shape. Really, if there's been one focus for the companies that we invest in over the last few years, it's, you know, bringing down debt and really being as conservative as possible and making sure that businesses are fit to survive in the long term. So generally speaking, the companies that we invest in are in good shape. But yeah, a difficult market environment without a doubt.
Right, so a tough time to be a credit investor, but with real opportunities for resilience as well. Well, the first quarter earnings season has just kicked off. Do you expect it to reflect these themes already?
Absolutely. And I think we've even seen this kind of before the current earnings season. There's a lot of focus from management teams across industries on all of these themes. What we're really looking for this earnings season is a better understanding of who can pass on inflation and where the cost of living is really taking its toll on companies. We've generally got a good idea of, you know, which sectors are in a good position to inflation link their revenues, but there's always room for cracks to appear in the ability to do that as the consumer just isn't in a position to absorb inflation in certain places. So that's something we'll be really looking out for this earnings season. What we're also thinking about is supply chains, which has been an issue for really some time now, right from the beginning of COVID. Supply chains have been a mess, they continue to be a mess, and we continue to predict, you know, when they're going to smoothen out again and continue to be surprised on the downside, I think. So what we're really looking for is any indications from companies that they're making structural fundamental changes to how they do business. So things that could change in the long term. So are the sort of suppliers who are in a mess, thinking of onshoring, for example. And in the case of the companies that are missing supplies, are they building inventories to make sure this doesn't happen again? And so what we're thinking about is, are companies fundamentally changing how they do business? And so we'll be looking for signs of that during this earnings season.
Well, thanks for talking through those dynamics, Madeline. Sonia, in light of the fragile macro environment, why do you think equities have been relatively resilient in recent weeks?
I think there's a couple of factors at work, but I think it's fair to say that equities obviously had the weakness, or we have seen the weakness in equity markets even prior to the geopolitical situation worsening. And clearly, in reflection of all the other factors that we've highlighted, in particular the expectation that with rampant inflation and the necessary central bank reaction function, that we would see obviously now the market preparing for the final phase of the cycle. And clearly that understanding has shifted over the past couple of weeks, because as John has highlighted earlier, obviously, the risk of recession, there was a lot of focus on an inverted yield curve, means that obviously for equity investors, this is still not a bad backdrop, but you obviously need to prepare for that final stretch of the cycle. And the resilience of the headline indices probably covers the noise and the shifts underneath. And to put this in context, energy over 1 year is by far the best performing sector, up 52%. Very, very clearly driven by what's been happening in commodity prices. Not surprisingly, materials is the second best performing sector, followed by utilities. So the sectoral shift is a reflection of the drivers that we have witnessed in the macroeconomic environment. And I think from here, everything that Madeline has just outlined will come to the fore, i.e. you will have to assess, obviously, the resilience of individual companies, sectors, in a late cycle context, in a rising rates environment. And as such, it's, I hope, very clear that the active choice and the active selection will become ever more important. It is a complex backdrop because there's a lot of structural forces at work that will literally determine the success over the next couple of quarters. And so we are aiming to make sure that there's a balance in our analysis of the immediate environment short term. But I think, as I've highlighted earlier, the understanding of potential longer term structural shifts that could arise on the back of the situation in Ukraine.
Thanks for that, Sonia. Clearly a lot more going on under the surface than headline index moves suggest, especially with long-term implications there. Well, let's turn now to something we used to discuss a lot, which is COVID-19. John, how concerned is the team about COVID developments in China? Are markets sufficiently pricing in the implications for domestic growth and global supply chains?
Yeah, so the zero COVID policy is the reason, of course, that it remains so thematically important in China relative to where there's been a very different policy, if you like. Now, from that perspective, very unusually, we now have our growth forecast for China 1% lower than the official target growth rate. And the reason that's unusual is the Chinese have been fantastically effective in controlling growth and the broader macroeconomy over a very prolonged period. So actually, ordinarily, you'd have a lot of faith in them hitting their target. But clearly, COVID is something that all governments have struggled with when it's impacted their country more. So from that perspective, we're seeing a lot of cases now, and we're starting to see that in more economically important regions such as Shanghai. But what is also really interesting and positive news is that the symptomatic cases are very low relative to the asymptomatic, actually a much lower proportion than we've generally seen in other countries. And that might be an indication that the vaccines that China has been using, while maybe not stopping people catching it entirely, are dramatically reducing the severity of the disease, or the newer strains are in and of themselves less infectious. Either of those would be very good news. So yeah, we have this below growth situation, and also all of the risks really to the downside, because everyone's expecting China's able to get this current wave under control, whereas actually the risks are that the shutdowns remain prolonged and rolling, and then that actually leads to further cuts in growth. Now, in terms of what markets are expecting, the COVID issue is very well flagged. Everyone understands that the risks are to the downside. So actually, again, that's a good example of us aiming to be on the other side of the boat. So we're really actually waiting for the opportunity to go long emerging market equities when we're kind of at max negative sentiment, and when we're starting to hear more on the positive policy response. And we are hearing more of that now. So talk in the last 24 hours of there will be monetary response when there needs to be. There's also been the first games in about 8 months approved by the Chinese authorities. So some loosening there of concerns on the regulation of tech. And so we're just starting to see those positive sides come through. And it's another good example of us just trying to be contrarian in our thinking.
Thanks, John. Madeline, could you, with your research and engagement hat on, could you sketch out some of the areas on which our global research and engagement groups, aka the GREGs, will focus over the coming months?
So we are very focused, understandably, on the implications of events in Ukraine right now. Really, I think where we're trying to focus at the moment is more thinking about the longer term implications rather than the direct impact of the conflict itself, which I think is reasonably well understood by markets now. So I alluded to it earlier, but supply chains and the reverse of globalization, both of these things were areas that we were thinking about already as a result of COVID, but wondering if there's been a further pressure added there potentially, and it's certainly something that we're going to be really focused on during the current earnings season. What I would say more generally is the very tragic and distressing events in the Ukraine have naturally really made our clients reassess in some cases how they think about responsible investment and what they expect from us on the responsible investment side. So that's a huge area of focus for us right now. Really a lot of questions to consider there in terms of balancing our investment activities and how we think about things like weapons, for example. We've had some very clearly defined policies in the past, and the opinions of some of our clients are really changing quite significantly here. So something that was a real no-no from an ESG point of view is suddenly becoming acceptable, but only in certain cases. So it's a really complicated issue. Not everybody thinks about it the same way. And what we're trying to deal with now is really come up with something that's going to work for the bulk of our client base. And complicated issues, as you can imagine.
Thanks, Madeline. A huge amount to digest and work through over the coming weeks and months. Well, Sonia, as always, we've covered a huge amount of ground today. What are the key takeaways for investors? And is there anything you'd like to add?
Yes, thank you, Max. I think, to me, the understanding of the current events and the implication for markets, and I think we all agree in particular for bond markets, because of the length of the bull market that we've witnessed and the potential, not the potential, the inflection point that we are witnessing right now, I think that is well understood by markets and already priced. To me, it is now all about making sure that we have a good understanding of the path forward, because acknowledging the inflection point is just part of the story. And I think markets are now already there. The question now is what will the inflection point lead towards, i.e. what will be, you know, longer term bond yields look like in 23, 24? And this is why obviously the picture becomes incredibly complex because of everything we've outlined. So it is not only that we have to think about the implications that arise from the geopolitical situation, and they are far from clear as we speak, but will have potential important implications in the inflation picture, for global supply chains, for every corporate company that operates on a global level. And as such, this will influence the opportunity set that we will find in markets. So the importance is for us on this analysis, and we do spend quite a lot of time on the longer term structural shifts, because they're as important in helping us identifying early investment opportunities, as is the whole debate around late cycle, when potentially the recession will hit, because that will clearly influence the shorter term backdrop in markets. being ahead of this is key. And obviously, I think what was very clear as well, hence the active choice of investment opportunities. And they might have a macro lens, they might have a micro lens, but they will all feed off that understanding of structural drivers of the long term. ESG and the responsible investment environment really has seen another big step forward, because again, the geopolitical situation has brought up a lot of questions, not only around the defense sector and whether this all of a sudden is part of a responsible investment universe, but the scoring of sovereigns, the way we think about investing in sovereigns is another topic we need to think about. And so as such, we will spend a lot of time again in making sure that we have the right frameworks in place that will transparently outline how we think about these issues. Energy security on the other, right? The whole debate around net zero climate change has now gotten another angle to consider because of the geopolitical environment. And so not surprisingly, what we're aiming for is really developing a holistic picture that we can put forward to clients in order to help them really to reach their goals in with regards to their investment ambition. So a lot to digest, but I think the importance of this year, the inflection point in global bond markets, and obviously the complexity of the forward-looking picture is something I'm sure we will cover in future podcasts and webinars. But I think it is clearly a very important point in markets in order to understand and to make sure that asset allocation decisions are reflecting this.
Thanks, Sonia. Yes, that's absolutely right. We will, of course, update our clients and listeners about that long-term analysis you talk about, which is so critical to understanding the evolving opportunity set out there. Well, finally, I would just like to ask you all what you've been watching, reading or listening to in recent weeks. I will get the ball rolling and say I've been reading The Book of Dune. Love the film and the sci-fi classic, and the book is a cracking read as well, even better than the film. Sonia.
I have had the pleasure of a week off last week, and we were flying to Goa, and obviously a long haul flight allows for a bit of watching. And I did watch House of Gucci, which is a fabulous narrative around, obviously, this wonderful brand that we all know. And Lady Gaga is just fabulous.
It's a great film and some great accents in that as well. Thank you. Madeline.
I've been watching a lot of trash TV lately, like just real lowbrow, you know, the less thinking the better. My favorite lately is The Home Edit on Netflix, which is basically two ladies who clean up people's houses and color coordinate everything. But it's just like weirdly soothing to watch. So would recommend it if, you know, you don't want to think very much.
Sounds great. Thank you. John?
Yeah, I've been reading a book called Noise by Daniel Kahneman, which is his latest take. So it's kind of moving away from the heuristics and biases and actually trying to look at sources of noise in decision making. So yeah, I won't lie, it was a bit of a long book and parts of it were quite repetitive, but at the end, some pretty good ideas. So I'm glad I persevered.
Great. Well, that's an eclectic mix of content, which perhaps people here in the UK might explore over the long bank holiday weekend. Thank you, Sonia, Madeline and John, for your time today. And thank you to our clients and listeners for joining us. Our next edition of the CIO call will be in May, when we will focus on real assets. In the meantime, you can find our latest updates via our social media channels on the LGIM blog and of course here on LGIM Talks.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us. And we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties, and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and general investment management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, elgim.com. Copyright 2021, Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, a licensed corporation, BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.